and I have a couple of copies, and this is a paper with Aditya Mattu of the World Bank. I'm going to make five propositions. One, there is a problem. Houston, we have a problem. Two, the problem is not a U.S. problem or not just a U.S. problem. It's a systemic problem. Three, from that diagnosis naturally follows three further propositions. One, because it's a systemic problem, a unilateral solution by the U.S., a unilateral approach, is probably undesirable and will likely be ineffective. My fourth proposition, that therefore when you turn towards multilateral solutions, the two options are IMF and WTO. But the multilateral solution through the IMF, while desirable and probably the first best, is going to be infeasible and ineffective for some of the reasons that were mentioned earlier by someone in the audience. Therefore, finally, we're left with my fifth proposition, that the most likely and feasible approach is going to be a multilateral solution through the WTO and with cooperation from the IMF. So it's not going to be either or. And what form that cooperation should take is what we spell out in the paper, and I will elaborate in a couple of minutes. So proposition one, Houston, we have a problem. I think if you look at the range of estimates, it's probably fair to say that, you know, the Chinese exchange rate is undervalued. The estimates vary, but a reasonable one put out by my colleagues Morris Goldstein and Nick Largy, that it's about 30 to 35%. And of course, additional evidence comes from the fact that in 2007, the current account to GDP ratio for China is going to be a whopping 12 billion, 12% of GDP, or about $440 billion, which is which compares with about $770 billion, which is the U.S. trade deficit in 2007. A kind of simple rule of thumb in economics is that, you know, the faster you grow, the bigger your current account deficit is going to be. This is completely unusual to have, you know, the world's highest rate of growth for 30 years and run a current account surplus. But I could gladly go into the economics of this and talk to some of the issues that some the other panelists spoke about, but I want to move on. Point number two, it's a systemic problem. It is not just a U.S. problem. What is my evidence for that? The EU is now reeling from euro appreciation, and the chorus of calls for anti-dumping action in Europe is mounting. Three, further evidence of a systemic problem is that the Chinese currency is a problem all around the emerging market world. Brazil, Mexico, India, Turkey, South Korea are all being affected by the Chinese exchange rate. Even as we speak, Brazil is contemplating action to restrict capital inflows because its currency is appreciating. The Indian government is also facing similar problems, contemplating some kind of action on capital controls. In fact, the Indian Prime Minister about 2 or 3 weeks ago was in China and was perhaps the first developing country leader who called for greater Chinese exchange rate flexibility. So we have to get away from the notion that this is just about the US. This has become a systemic problem. Now, so then we move on to the first possible solution, which is unilateral action by the United States. My own view is that any action by the US, either in the form of countervail or whatever, is going to be of doubtful legality. I take the point that some experts have said, you know, exchange rates, undervalued exchange rates can be deemed to be an export subsidy, but I'm not so sure, one. The second thing is that even if you could make that determination, it would be much more credible and less suspect if that determination of undervalued exchange rate were made by a multilateral body. I mean, if the U.S. Congress or the U.S. Treasury were to make that, I think, especially since this is such a difficult issue, you know, as someone said, determining undervaluation is not an easy proposition, especially because of the difficulty inherent in the exercise, you need a multilateral determination of whether the currency is undervalued or not. Therefore, given that you know, unilateral action would be of doubtful validity, the other problem with unilateral action is that it only addresses the problem of Chinese exports into the United States. What about the fact that an undervalued exchange rate acts like a barrier to imports into China? How do you address that? And that can't be done by subsidy countervailing action, so you need a more general systemic solution. Furthermore, unilateral action by the United States is not only going to be ineffective, it has been ineffective. There have been numerous legislative initiatives, and they've never really seen the light of day. They've all been aborted efforts. And why is that? Very simple, I think. It's been like that because U.S. corporate interests, which drive a lot of this legislation, have been ambivalent about China, about the Chinese exchange rate. And I think Congressman Levin referred to that. You know, some of them actually make money. They're invested in China. So a lot of them make money in China from the undervalued exchange rate, and a lot of them perhaps suffer. But U.S. labor, I think, is much more unambiguous in its stance towards the Chinese exchange rate, and that's something I will come to at the end. So corporate America is ambivalent, and that's why you see a lack of progress here. Of course, the other reason, of course, is that perhaps China has just become too big for even the U.S. to confront alone, which again calls for a more systemic cooperative response. Now, cooperative response, what about action in the IMF? I think it's desirable in principle because the IMF is charged with doing this. But my colleague Mike Musa, who's the former chief economist of the IMF, has written extensively on this. I mean, in about 44,000 Article 4 consultations by the IMF, there has not been a single instance where I think the IMF has said some currency is undervalued. The number I'm saying is zero. It might not quite be zero. It might be a few. But Mike Musa has a paper on this. But I think the problem is deeper as to why you cannot get action in the IMF. First point, someone mentioned, they're absolutely right. It's a problem of inadequate leverage. The IMF has been very effective at getting debtor countries to change their policies, but it's almost never been successful in getting large creditor countries to change policies. And China is now a large creditor country. So it's not going to be so easy. I think the other problem is that many developing countries who have to, you know, be part of a solution are going to find it easier to rally around in the WTO than in the IMF because they have concerns about the IMF's governance structure. They feel it's very outdated. So why find a solution in a body that, you know, you think doesn't completely represent your interests? And finally, of course, there is no enforcement mechanism in the IMF. So the IMF, as the exclusive forum for dealing with this, is not going to be, I think, feasible. So then we turn to the last option. How about multilateral action in the WTO? I think it's fair to say that current rules really do not allow you to go after a country with an undervalued exchange rate. Yes, there is Article 15.4, but I don't think it provides clear enough obligations to win successfully a dispute in the WTO. On the countervailing question, I have my own doubts about whether an undervalued exchange rate can clearly be labeled as a financial contribution. That's going to be a thorny legal issue, but I don't think the law is as clear-cut as people think it is. But the most compelling reason for the WTO to regulate undervalued exchange rates is the following. The WTO says tariffs are prohibited, export subsidies are prohibited individually. An undervalued exchange rate is a combination of import tariffs and export subsidies. So if you regulate each of the individual constituents, you know, you should regulate a kind of heavy-duty manifestation of those same instruments. So our proposition is that you need a new rule in the WTO which says undervalued exchange rates caused by government action will be deemed to be export subsidies and import tariffs and therefore prohibited. So that's our proposal. Now, how would it be implemented? Because after all, you need to make a determination of what undervaluation is. So our suggestion is that actually the IMF would play would be the agency that provides that technical verdict into any WTO dispute on undervaluation. And there is a precedent for it. In the WTO, when countries maintained restrictions for balance of payments reasons, the IMF had to provide a verdict on whether or not there was a balance of payments problem and whether those restrictions were justified. So there is substantial WTO legal jurisprudence for a model in which the IMF and the WTO cooperate on undervalued exchange rates. Now, what about the politics of the exchange rate? We are proposing a new rule, but this new rule has to be negotiated. I don't think this can be unilaterally imposed or taken to dispute settlement. Now, how will this negotiation come about? And this is where I think there is a huge coalition. Labor in the United States, so I actually think a future trade agenda for a Democratic administration, in a future Democratic administration, an attractive trade agenda would be to put the exchange rate, because labor, I think US labor, could be quite keen on pursuing this in the WTO. So you have labor in the United States, you have the European Union, which is really hurting from the appreciation and imports from China, and a whole slew of emerging market countries should come together and say, we want to put undervalued exchange rates on the trade agenda and the Doha agenda. Let me remind you that part of the reason why the Doha process is stalled, because developing countries like Brazil and India have said, look, we don't want to open our manufacturing markets even further because we'll be killed by Chinese competition. So there is an element there where addressing the exchange rate could also help push forward the Doha process. I have one more minute. But China is China, so it's not going to be enough to just, you know, because you've got to get China to agree to this new rule. So our proposition is that there is a possible carrot that countries can offer China, which is to tell China, you agree to this rule on undervalued exchange rates, which all of us want. In return, we give you market economy status in the WTO, which will protect China from unilateral anti-dumping and countervail action. So that's the kind of deal that we have in mind, where China agrees to this rule, and in return, it gets market economy status. There are a number of aspects of this proposal we can go into in the discussion, but I want to make one last point, a kind of historical digression. This problem of how will countries with current account surpluses and undervalued exchange rates, how they will adjust, is a problem that John Maynard Keynes thought about long, long ago. And he, in fact, wanted a scarce currency clause in the IMF under which countries with surpluses and were not adjusting would be sanctioned by partners. The scarce currency clause never took off because, as we say, it was the right idea but for the wrong institution because the institution didn't have an enforcement mechanism. So our proposal, in a sense, tries to rehabilitate the Keynes' idea of the scarce currency clause by drawing upon the comparative advantage of the WTO as an enforcement mechanism and the IMF as a technical repository of wisdom on exchange rates. And that's how I think the whole thing could come together and possibly work. I mean, am I sure it's going to work? Am I sure China is going to agree to this? Obviously not. But as Congressman Levin ended with, the alternative is the status quo.